It's time now for Green Visions, a KUMD production to encourage green thinking and green actions. Green Visions is made possible by All Energy Solar, a full-service solar installer in the Twin Ports, and by the Minnesota Power Energy Conservation Program, making progress toward a lower carbon energy future. Our forecast for today, not maybe a bad day at all in the next couple of days. Clear skies, not a lot of wind, perfect temperature to go for, you know, a nice relaxing paddleboard. And then, of course, you could do a nice relaxing paddleboard journey from Duluth to the Arctic Ocean, as our guest has just completed. Jared Munch joins us this morning in the studios. Hey, Jared, hi.
Hi.
So I've already asked you the, what are you, some kind of nut question, so we've already kind of gotten that out of the way. I said, that sounds kind of dangerous. Why would you want to do that? Tell me what you said.
Well, the danger is the exact reason I do want to do something like that. Now, when you say danger, it's very subject to the person who is on the water, in my opinion. And what I usually tell people is if you have the skills and the knowledge and just the preparedness to be out in those conditions, it actually becomes a lot more fun than dangerous, if anything. Now, I do come from a long line of whitewater canoeing and surfing, so when I can combine all those skills on a stand-up paddleboard, I'm extremely comfortable out in big waves, and it's just really fun for me. It just becomes a matter of endurance to cover all of the miles at that point.
So let's talk about the route, first of all, so folks can get an idea of the actual route that you took. And you left, you weren't exactly sure of the date, but you said it's somewhere around June 20th, and you've just completed 920 miles. And to me, doing that in under 2 months, I mean, it's just over a month, seems like that was really, really fast. But, of course, as far as we know, nobody else has done it, so we don't really know. But let's talk about the route and talk about, you know, so you can tell us kind of the different conditions that you encountered.
Sure. Well, my route started in Duluth. It took me across the north shore of Lake Superior, moving in a clockwise direction to the mouth of the Michipicoten River. And that portion was about 450 miles of paddling on Lake Superior. From there, my route took me 60 miles upstream on the Michipicoten River, followed by a short hike across the Continental Divide into the Arctic Drainage Basin, and then I had a 350-mile descent of the Missinabe River to the mouth of it at James Bay. So a little bit more details about my route. When we start with my experience on Lake Superior, is the lake was not calm. Now, last time that I did a big trip around Superior, I had calm water almost every single day, and I didn't want to have that again. I found that the monotony of paddling in flat water every day for almost 50 days in a row 4 years ago when I went around the lake was extremely mentally fatiguing. I felt like I wasn't using my brain at all and just doing the same thing over and over. So, yes, the windy and wavy conditions this time did make it physically much more difficult. I enjoyed the experience a lot more. The day I departed, I actually paddled 26 miles straight into about a 15 mile an hour headwind with 1 to 2 foot waves. It was completely brutal. But following that, I had a couple of calm days to kind of recover. And across the entire Canadian side of the lake, I actually had almost perfect downwind conditions, wind blowing 10 to 15 miles an hour at my back with consistent 1 to 2 foot waves. So what happens to me on a paddleboard during those conditions is since my body is standing, it essentially becomes a sail. So in those conditions, I was able to move extremely fast. I had the wind pushing me along and then even the waves pushing me along because on the really big racing style stand-up paddleboard, I'm able to essentially surf the waves out in open water and go extremely long distances in not a whole lot of time.
So I'm a little, I guess, you know, I don't paddleboard, and I see friends, you know, post pictures of paddleboarding, and they're on, you know, little inland lakes, and they're in their swimsuits and their life jackets, and they look happy, and they're standing there, and maybe their dog's on the paddleboard. And I'm thinking about being in 2 foot waves, and I'm thinking, is that more like surfing?
It depends on where the waves are.
Okay.
Typically, surfing would be classified as being on a board near shore where the waves are right. actually crashing over and pushing a lot of water around. Where I say I was, quote, surfing, it was out in open water. And it's kind of a strange phenomena to be able to catch and ride waves out there because there isn't nearly as much energy of water moving around in the open water. But once again, when I'm standing up and I have all that wind pushing at my back, I'm able to get enough speed and acceleration with a combination of the wind in my paddle that I can glide across the faces of the waves in open water.
But you're not necessarily standing there all relaxed the way people are in so many of these photos. I mean, because the waves are pushing you around, whether
right.
they're pushing you backwards or trying to push you forwards, they're still pushing you around a lot. So that's a different deal altogether. So what did you do for food and sleeping arrangements and everything? You didn't just lie down on your paddleboard and hope for the best overnight, did you?
No, definitely not.
Okay, yeah. It's like, how did I end up back where I started? Oops.
Yeah. Now, while I was in Minnesota, I was very fortunate. I have plenty of friends along the North Shore, so I did not have to set up my tent one single night in Minnesota. I was staying with friends. I spent one night at the Betty's Pies restaurant.
Oh,
the owner
poor
there is really
pumpkin.
Nice to me. Yeah, it was really tough.
Yeah, talk about the trials and tribulations of this long, long 920-mile stay at Betty's Pies.
Yeah, so the first 150 miles was luxurious.
Yes.
However, once I got into Canada, conditions got a little bit more intense. I got into more remote locations, so I was mostly camping at that point. Now for my gear, I had an ultralight tent, lightweight sleeping bag. All of my food was dehydrated aside from granola bars that I ate during the day, and it was all packed into 3 dry bags that were strapped onto the deck of my board. Now
how much did that all weigh?
I would estimate that I had around 50 pounds of gear on my board.
Okay.
That was all my camping gear, food, fuel for my stove.
Okay. Wow. So you'd stop and you'd camp and whatever, and you get there. So the question, of course, that everybody asks when someone does something, A, unusual, and B, physically taxing, and C, over a long distance. I mean, it's like, you know, anybody maybe can get up the guts to climb something, you know, up and back in a day, whatever. But when you say, I'm making a commitment to doing this, and you tell everybody, including the media, and then it's going to take, you know, days and days and days, do you ever say to yourself, why? Why? No, mistake. Go home. Go back to Betty's Pies. Live at Betty's Pies.
Yeah, that thought went through my mind many times, mostly before I had even left for the trip. I would say the hardest part about doing something like this is just the mental hurdles that you have to make the days leading up to it. And then even during the trip, the mental hurdles that I have to make every day just to get onto the water when I know that the lake is going to be windy and wavy and kind of crazy out there in the water. So mentally, that was definitely the most difficult part of this journey.
I think a lot of people can empathize with that. Maybe not with a physical challenge like that, but we all have things we need to do that we really don't want to do. Did you learn anything about how to motivate or discipline yourself to go ahead and do something that your brain is telling you, no, we don't want to do this?
Oh, definitely. When you talk about discipline, just in terms of saving up money and time to do something like this, that was one of the biggest steps to being able to do it. You know, I'm saving up money for a year on end, working 80 hours a week. So by the time that it was, you know, time to go, I felt like I was so invested in the trip that I couldn't possibly change my mind to not do it. So working so hard for so long was one of the things that kept me on the correct path of doing it. But once again, there were many times that I just wanted to abort altogether. Once the nerves of what I was about to undertake really set in, I wanted to turn back and never see the lake again, essentially.
Right. And yet somehow you talked yourself into it, or
yeah,
you overcame.
I overcame.
What was your mental dialogue when you were having those thoughts about, you know, I mean, obviously, I know I forget it. And what was the other dialogue that eventually won?
The mental reward of finishing and accomplishing something like this, and, you know, the feeling of being able to shrink the world down just a little bit smaller and know that I made it from Duluth to James Bay all under my own power. It's a really good feeling. Something that not many people would get to experience, and I know that I'm extremely lucky to be, you know, physically able to do something like that. So at the time, I kind of felt like, yes, I didn't want to do it, but I was going to be doing a very large disservice to myself, and especially to people that were maybe being inspired by my efforts and my journey. So those are some of the things that kept me moving along. And then also I was raising money for the Neighborhood Youth Service in Duluth. So the money that I was raising through my journey will eventually be used to provide outdoor programming for kids on the Duluth Hillside. So that was one of the last things that kind of kept me motivated and kept me from just aborting altogether.
These are kids that, you know, I was thinking this morning for some reason about how kids just, parents are more concerned about dangers. Kids don't get outside the way they used to. So if they're going to get outside and spend quality time outside, they kind of need some help from adults. They need some guidance. They need to be in a group in order to really take advantage of these things. What kinds of outdoor programs are you hoping that they'll be able to look into?
There are a lot of opportunities. One thing that I do hope that they can get into is just, you know, nothing as extreme as what I'm doing, but more simple daily activities, going sledding after school, maybe going to some swim lessons, potentially even having the opportunity to go paddling sometime. Anything to get the kids outside is what my goal is. I feel that, you know, if you're trying to make environmental actions, there are a lot of indirect actions that you can make that will have good outcomes. So my idea is getting kids outside and not necessarily telling them that the environment is important, but just getting them to appreciate our natural surroundings in the first place. It's going to make them more likely to respect our natural surroundings by the time that they are older, and hopefully share that knowledge that they've achieved with others.
What you love, you want to take care of.
Exactly.
And you also want to understand more about. So, what an incredible journey and what an incredible story. We've got some photographs from you. We've got some links to more information about your story, and we'll get all those links up so it'll be easy for folks to read more, look at more, and enjoy the photographs. And Jared, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Jared Munch joins us in the studio this morning. Yeah, he came all the way to the studio, but since he just paddleboarded 920 miles from Duluth to the Arctic Ocean, it probably wasn't much of a trek at all. Green Visions on KUMD is made possible in part by support from the Minnesota Power Energy Conservation Program, making progress toward a lower carbon energy future.